Hare Krishna. So, welcome everyone. So, thank you for joining us on Saturday evening. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udhirai Nashta Praeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagvate Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Neshiki Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim Yatkripatamaham vande shri guru dinatarinam Paramananda madhavam shri chaitanyeshwaram Namom vishnupadaya krishna prishthaya bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshatarine Namo Mahavidanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurakshe Namaha Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhakta Vataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaitya Gadadha Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare So we have been discussing Srimad Bhagavatam third canto Chapter 1. Last time we were discussing how when Vidura was trying to give good counsel to Dhritarashtra to accept the peace message of Lord Krishna and don't listen to Duryodhana and his whims. At that time Duryodhana arrived there, he heard the conversation of Vidura and Dhritarashtra and he was really angry. He was angry at Vidura for speaking like that, telling Vidura that you are the spy of Pandavas. We are maintaining you in this palace, but you are always speaking in favor of Pandavas. And he was ready to kick Vidura out of palace, bereft him from all the resources. And at that time, Vidura, Hearing the sharp words of Duryodhana, he prepared himself to leave the palace, to go to forest, to go to the places of pilgrimage, take that opportunity to give up his roles and responsibilities as the minister of the Kauravas and utilize that opportunity for spiritual progress, to absorb in transcendence. So that's what we were discussing last time. So moving forward, see, all this argument or all this disagreement, the war, this is happening because of somebody's ego. Somebody is giving up to one's lower nature, not adhering to the principle of dharma, and that is causing all this disturbance and the war. As in the forest, because of the friction between the bamboos, sometimes the spark generate between the bamboos and it lead to the forest fire. So that is all because of the friction between the bamboos. The same way, the friction between the living entities because of their ego clashes, it leads to disagreement and eventually a lot of fights, quarrels and wars in the society. This material world is also a great forest. And in this forest also, the fire in the form of war takes place because of the violent passion of the conditioned souls. When the conditioned soul is illusioned by the external energy, and because of their violent passion, when this passion is guided by the illusory energy, that leads to the war. That is like the fire in this forest of this world. Because of people's ego, their desire for the control of power, because of their discrimination among people, it all leads to the disturbance in the society. So in this case, the Kauravas, specifically Duryodhana, who had so much envy from the Pandavas, who has so much false ego to take over the kingdom, and he was discriminating against the Pandavas. He wanted to always destroy the Pandavas, and that led to all this family fight, the war within the family. So this, just the ego, when somebody gives up to the lower nature, there are so many examples in the world that ego clashes has led to the disturbance. For example, the British, they're trying to rule over practically every country in the world. They wanted to dominate everybody and they want to control. So they ruled over so many different countries and dominating over one particular race. For example, the white people, they want to make the black as their slave, keep them as a slave at the home and make them do all sort of chores. So one person's ego to destroy a particular culture, to dominate over a particular race. For example, Hitler also. Hitler wanted to destroy the Jews. He wanted to destroy the Germans. So within this world, there are so many clashes at every level because of personal egos. The countries have their specific boundaries. There is ego clash or the disagreements between the two countries. One country wants to take over the resources of another country. So there is always war going on. For example, there is a Cold War going on always between India and Pakistan. There is Cold War going on between America and Russia. There is war going on between America and Iran. So all these war, what is this? Sometimes this is a war because of taking over the resources of another country, or sometimes just to destroy one particular race, one particular set of people. There is war between two countries. Sometimes there is war within one country between two states. For example, Tamil Nadu and Karnataka, there is a war between them to for the Kaveri River. Who will utilize the water of the river? So this wars, USA and Iraq war is happening by so that they can control. USA can control over the resources of oil. So all these wars between two countries, between two states, within the family, between two brothers, this is all because of so much of false ego, the violent passion guided by the illusory energy. And this happens within the spiritual organization also. There are so many spiritual organization, when people don't go along, they have some sort of philosophical arguments. It leads to drift in the society within one organization. And then there is groupism, there is separation. So there are so many religious organizations like that, like Swaminarayan. There are two different groups, BAPS and ISSO, right? One group is BAPS, another is known as ISSO because of some philosophical misunderstanding, philosophical disagreement. And this nature for fight, this nature for quarrel and hypocrisy is so deep-rooted. Sometimes people use religion also just as a garb to fulfill their violent passion. Somebody may say, "Oh, I'm very passionate about preaching." But then this violent passion, is that passion guided by the illusory energy or is guided by the internal energy, the pleasure potency of the Lord? One have to check that. And because of the passion, sometimes people want to put others down. They want to bereft them from the resources so that I want to be ahead in the race. I don't want somebody else to take better credit, or I don't want somebody to get ahead of me. So all those things happen in spiritual organizations also. This violent passion leading to disagreement and fights, quarrels, ultimately wars within the society. And there are so many examples, the World War, World War I, World War II. All this is because of this violent passion. And we see in scriptures also, this is described as Daksha Prajapati. Because of his passion, he was guided by his violent passion under the influence of external energy, illusory energy. He wanted respect from everybody, and in that passion, he disrespected Lord Shiva, which led to so much of big clashes between the followers of Lord Shiva and the followers of Daksha Prajapati. Even Indra gets guided by this violent passion under the influence of illusory energy. When Indra was attacked by Narkasura, Narkasura stole the earrings of Indra's mother, and Indra was disturbed by this demon. At that time, Indra approached Lord Krishna, "Please help me." And Lord Krishna went and he fought with Narkasura, brought back all the stolen items of Indra. He gave the kundals, the earrings of the mother of Indra. He returned those. And at that time, Indra was so much favorable towards Krishna. He was offering him his obeisances. He was giving him some gifts. And he gave a Parijata flower to Lord Krishna, which he offered to Rukmini Devi. And when Satyabhama requested Lord Krishna that, "I want this Parijata, I want not one flower, I want the whole tree." And to satisfy Satyabhama, Lord Krishna came back to Swargaloka. He was taking that Parijata tree. And at that time, Indra, he became too passionate. "Oh, this is my property. How can you take this away?" Earlier, same Indra was offering respect to Lord Krishna. Now he is ready to fight with Lord Krishna. What is that? That is passion, the violent passion, control over resources. Oh, this belongs to me. How can you take this? And he is ready to fight with Lord Krishna. So this violent passion at different level, it leads to so much of quarrels and fights. Another example from Mahabharata, we see of Jarasandha. Jarasandha, guided by this violent passion, he had kept so many kings under his imprisonment. And for what? He wanted to give a Narabali, sacrifice the human beings to Goddess Kali to please, to become more prosperous. And that is his own concoction to perform such sort of human sacrifice, Narabali, which is not even recommended in the Shastras. So people, they come to their lower nature, they become guided by ignorance and passion, and they try to control over other people, they try to discriminate and take away the resources from them. That is like the friction causing fire within the forest. So same way this friction causing wars within this material world. So Duryodhana was guided by this illusory energy and he wanted to destroy the Pandavas, take away all the resources from them, and he insulted Vidura also. Vidura utilized this opportunity. Let me just go away from this place and absorb myself in transcendence. And at that time Vidura, after leaving the palace, disguising himself, not showing his royal status, wearing some regular normal clothes without any crown on his head, with his mated hair, he was wandering around different places of pilgrimage. So Vidura visited so many holy places, so many temples all across Bharatvarsha. So this is described very clearly in Bhagavatam, that Vidura visited so many different places and he visited so many different temples where the form of the Lord in his various forms are worshipped. So these temples have been existing for so long, for thousands and thousands of years. It's not that these temples have been built something recently. So this is a propaganda these days, that our temples have been into existence for just a couple of thousand years ago. There were no temples earlier. But the scriptures clearly describe the temples have been existing for thousands and thousands of years. 5,000 years back, Vidura visited so many temples, so many holy places. He took darshan of the Archa Vigraha form of the Lord. And this Archa Vigraha, the Archa Murti, these temples, these Archa Vigraha Murtis are existing so people can take darshan of the Lord. They can perform the austerity by visiting these holy places to purify themselves. So the temple of the Lord in his various forms and even in the form of Krishna has existed earlier. It is not that after Dwapar Yuga, when Lord Krishna personally appeared, and then after that the Krishna temples have been built. Even temples of Lord Krishna have existed earlier, because Krishna appeared yuga after yuga. So the temples of Lord Krishna also have existed earlier, as we hear about Prithu Maharaj and we hear about Ambarish Maharaj. In their description also, it uses the word Krishna, that Ambarish Maharaj, he surrendered everything to Lord Krishna. He used to visit the temple of Lord Krishna. Same way Prithu Maharaj, he used to visit the temple of Lord Krishna and serve the Lord, worship the Lord. Sava Manav Krishna Padarvindayo. So the word Krishna is used specifically. Sava mana Krishna padaravindayo. That his mind was completely absorbed at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So these temples have existed for thousands and thousands of years ago. The different Archa Vigraha form of the Lord have existed. This is not the something creation within this Kali Yuga, within just few 500 or 1000 years back, as some unscrupulous people, they try to propagate that sort of philosophy. And these temples, they were built, huge temples were built with tall gopuram, right? The entrance door with tall shikhar on top of that, so that this gopuram is visible from far away. So what is the significance of building this tall gopuram is people can take darshan of the temple itself from far away, and this gopuram is decorated with the Vishnu symbols, chakra. The chakra of Lord is visible at the top of the gopuram from far away. Like in Jagannath Puri, we know in Jagannath Puri temple, there's a chakra at the top which is visible from far away. And no matter from whatever side one sees, it looks like this chakra, one is facing towards that chakra. And Haridas Thakur, when he came to Jagannath Puri, he was not entering into the temple because of his born in a Muslim family. But he was a great devotee of the Lord. He is Namacharya, always chanting the holy name of the Lord. But he was not going close to the temple. He was just taking darshan from far away of the gopuram, the chakra on the top of the temple. So the significance of these temples, people can visit the temple, take darshan of the Archa Vigraha form of the Lord and purify themselves, perform austerities by visiting these holy places. These days, even though this temple with tall gopuram with chakra on top exists, but the influence of Kali Yuga is so much that sky rise buildings are getting built everywhere, even in the holy places. You go to Vrindavan, you go to Jagannath Puri, you go to any other holy place, there are so many tall buildings getting built that these buildings are 20, 30, 40 stories tall, and the gopurams are no more visible from far away distance. That is the influence of Kali Yuga. But this temple exists. This system of gopuram, tall gopuram is there. The system of establishing the Archa Vigraha form of the Lord is very significant. So Prabhupada write in the purport, the sum of this Archa representation of the Lord situated in different places of pilgrimage are mentioned here. The Lord is present at Mathura, which is the birthplace of Lord Krishna. So he is present in Mathura as Adi Keshava. The Lord is present at Puri, Odisha, as Lord Jagannath, also known as Purushottama. He is present as Allahabad, Prayag, as Bindu Madhava. At Mandra Hill, he is present as Madhusudana. So like that, Lord's various form are present at various holy places. And all these Archa Murtis, these are summarized in Chaitanya Charitamrita as Sarvatra Prakashatanra Bhakte Sukhavidite Jagatera Adharmanasi Dharma Sthapite. The Lord has so distributed himself all over the universe just to give pleasure to the devotees, to give the common man the facility to eradicate his sins and to establish the religious principles in the world. It's clearly mentioned what is the purpose of establishing these temples, purpose of installing the Archa Vigraha, the deity form of the Lord. The deity form of the Lord is not just some mental concoction of somebody, that somebody has made God in some image. This Archa Vigraha form of the Lord is Shastric description. It is authorized description, the authorized form of the Lord. By serving the Archa Vigraha form of the Lord, one can directly serve the Lord. One can directly take darshan of the Lord. So Archa Vigraha form of the Lord is non-different from the Lord himself. Like the post office serves the purpose to distribute the mail to the journal people. And the post office has established various post boxes all across the city. And if one puts a letter in any post box, which is authorized by the government, which is authorized by the post office, ultimately it will reach the post office and gets distributed where it's supposed to go. So this post box serves as the same purpose as the post office. So in the same way, the authorized Archa Vigraha form of the Lord is non-different from the Lord. By serving the Archa Vigraha form of the Lord, one is serving the Lord directly. But today's people, they are so much interested in making the statue of some ordinary people. They want to make the statue of some politician, some famous sports person, some famous businessman. So they, in this Kali Yuga, this whole new trend of making statue of all these mundane, ordinary people is so popular at every crossroad. किसी भी चौराहे पर जाइए आपको किसी ना किसी का स्टैचू लगा हुआ दिख जाएगा. And that statue, it's just statue standing there. Who want to worship that statue? Nobody goes there to worship them. Even if somebody worship that statue, there is not going to be any reciprocation. So all these statues are standing there. Who comes there? Only the birds, the crows come there. They leave their vishta on their heads. They are covered with the vishta. So once in a year, on particular day, on the birthday celebration of that particular personality, somebody will come and clean up that statue and offer some garland. But throughout the year, nobody pays any attention. So all these building the statue of these ordinary people, this is mundane activity. Whereas the Archa Vigraha of the Lord, which is the Shastric recommended way of worshipping the Supreme Lord. Because with our material senses, we are not able to perceive the Lord who is present everywhere. So Lord, with His grace, He appears within the material element in the form of metal, in the form of wood, in the form of clay. One can make the form of the Lord, establish it as the recommendation of scripture, the prana pratishtha process, and then worship the Lord. And Lord accept all the offerings offered to the Archa Vigraha. Some people claim, oh, we offer the food to the Lord, we offer this navedya to the Lord. Does Lord really eat that? After offering, the food is still lying there. Yes, Lord very well accepts that navedya, that offering. He accepts that in the subtle form, not in the gross form. The food in the gross form, स्थूल रूप से वो भोजन वहीं पर पड़ा है, बट सूक्ष्म रूप से भगवान उसको ग्रहण कर रहे हैं. बिकॉज कृष्णा कैन एक्सेप्ट द ऑफरिंग बाय हिज एनी ऑफ द सेंसेस. ऑल हिज सेंसेस कैन परफॉर्म द टास्क ऑफ एनी अदर सेंसेस. ही कैन एक्सेप्ट द ऑफरिंग थ्रू हिज आईज. बाय जस्ट लुकिंग एट द फूड इन द सटल फॉर्म, ही एक्सेप्ट द ऑफरिंग ऑफ द डिवोटी. And that offering in the gross form is still lying there as the prasad, the remnants of the Lord, which is accepted by the devotees as the prasad of the Lord, the mercy of the Lord. So this concept of temples, concept of the Archa Vigraha form of the Lord has existed for thousands of years. Because Vidura, 5,000 years ago, he visited so many different holy places. And Vidura was visiting all these places unseen by the other people. People were not able to recognize him, that he is the prime minister of Hastinapur, because Vidura was hiding his identity by growing tall facial hair, the hair on his head, without keeping any crown on the head and wearing some regular ordinary clothes. So he was just in the getup of a sadhu, a getup of a hermit. And the purpose of pilgrimage is to purify ourselves. The purpose of pilgrimage is to please the Lord. Not to have fun or to please some people of society. Sometimes that is the concept people take. Oh, I want to go to Vrindavan. I want to go to Mayapur. And why do you want to go? Oh, just for a change. for a change, I just want to get away from this environment, and for a change, I want to go spend some time in Vrindavan or Mayapur. That is not the purpose. The purpose of visiting the holy places is to perform austerity, to please the Lord, to purify ourselves. And there are so many sadhus we see who are wandering around these places of pilgrimage, these holy cities. And they are with torn clothes, matted hairs. And when we visit these holy places, sometimes person with a wrong mindset may consider these sadhus as some ordinary people or even as hypocrites, dhongi, right? Because that concept is also so deep-rooted. We judge others thinking, is he genuine sadhu or he is just showing off, making a show of being a renounced person, being a sadhu. When we are going to the holy places, when we see all these saintly people all around, we should not judge anybody, and we should have deep respect in the heart for everybody. At least they have renounced their comfort of the home and they are in the holy places, in that sacred environment. This concept of dhongi people, hypocrite, is so deep rooted in our mind because of what we have been fed into our brains. All these social media, these movies, they come up and they highlight only the dhongi sadhus only, the hypocrite sadhus. They never show any genuine sadhus because their agenda is to make money. And they make money by blaspheming others, by criticizing others, by showing the negative aspect in the society. The TRP of all these news channels and everything, it goes with some masala news only, not by showing some genuine holy places and genuine sadhus. And we have been fed that negativity so much into our brain that we look at everybody as dhongi, as hypocrite. But before labeling others as hypocrite or the dhongi people, we should look under our collar. से बोलते हैं ना कि अपने कॉलर के नीचे चेक करके देखो पहले, अपने ग्रेबान में झांक के देखो पहले, हु आर वी? एवरीबडी इज हिपोक्राइट. वी शो समथिंग एल्स टू द आउटसाइड वर्ल्ड एंड इनसाइड वी आर समथिंग एल्स. इन फ्रंट ऑफ अवर पेरेंट्स वी आर समथिंग एल्स, इन फ्रंट ऑफ अवर चिल्ड्रन वी आर समथिंग एल्स, इन फ्रंट ऑफ अवर फ्रेंड्स वी आर समथिंग एल्स. इवन वेन वी कम इन द डिवोटी एसोसिएशन, इन फ्रंट ऑफ डिवोटी वी show to be something different. So we have to be honest with ourselves. Are we being genuine or are we being hypocrites? So before labeling anybody as hypocrite or dhongi sadhu, dhongi person, we should think, let me try to become a genuine sadhu then, right? So we can make a promise to ourselves, we can make promise to our parents that, okay, I want to become a very decent, genuine sadhu, to show as an example to the world what is a genuine sadhu. So many people, they give up the comfort of their home, they renounce everything, the worldly possessions, and they visit the holy places to surrender everything to the Lord, to take shelter of the Lord, progress in spiritual life. So Vidura was visiting all these holy places. After visiting so many places, he arrived at the shores of Yamuna. And there Vidura met another great devotee of the Lord, the associate of the Lord, Uddhava. So when Vidura met Uddhava, they both were so much joyous by seeing each other, and they both started to speak sweet words for each other, glorifying each other. Vidura was telling Uddhava, "Oh, you are so great. You have always lived with the Lord. You have always had the personal association with the Lord. And that is how why Vidura has so much love for Uddhava. And Uddhava is glorifying Vidura. No, no, you are great. I live close to the Lord, but you live in the heart of the Lord. So they both are glorifying each other. That is actually the quality of the saintly person. When they meet, they glorify each other. Rather than seeing the faults in others, we should try to see the good in others and try to glorify their great qualities. So Vidura and Uddhava, they met, they had sweet exchanges, and Vidura is now inquiring from Uddhava about the welfare of all the different people in relation to Lord Krishna. There is a great message to learn from this whole exchange. See, when Vidura met Uddhava, now he is inquiring about so many different people who are directly related to Krishna. He is not asking, even one time Vidura did not ask Uddhava, did Lord Krishna ever remember me? Did he ever talk about me? Did he ever ask anything about me? Did he say anything about me? So Vidura is not asking at all about himself. He is asking about all other people who are directly associated with Krishna. So what can we learn from this as a general message? See, with us what happens is, if a devotee, he met our guru, right? He met Guru Maharaj, and he, after meeting Guru Maharaj, after staying with him for few weeks, few days, he comes back. What do we inquire from him? Generally, our mentality is we want to ask, oh, did our Guru Maharaj ask about me? Did he ever and tell you anything about me? Did he remember me or not? We are not concerned about, oh, did Guru Maharaj talk about that devotee or this devotee, and we don't remember all the close associate of our guru. We are concerned with ourselves. That is the selfish mentality. Sometimes we may say, oh, I want to bring the devotees closer to Guru Maharaj. They should surrender to Guru Maharaj through me. But they should never get close to Guru. If you want to ask anything to our Guru, just make me as the medium. Ask through me. You don't have to directly get close to Guru. Or even to say that to Krishna. But Vidura is not asking about himself. He is asking about all the other devotees who are very close to the Lord. But because of our pride, because of our envious mentality, we always think about ourselves. We consider ourselves as the most important person. How can somebody else be more dear to Krishna or more dear to Guru? So that is the sense of pride. And that sense of pride actually spoils all our spiritual progress or our spiritual advancement. And Krishna does not like this, even the tinge of pride in the heart of the devotee. It's like when you make the kheer. Hey, I hope everybody know how to make kheer, especially all the Matajis, for sure, they know how to make kheer. So how do you make kheer? You take a nice pot, and then you add milk in the pot. You add the rice in the pot. Turn on the flame. And you start to cook, regularly stirring the milk and the rice in that. And then you add the sugar. So that is the ordinary kheer. Just milk, rice, sugar. If somebody wants some fancy kheer, they can add some almonds or cashews or the raisins, cardamom powder. So all these things can be added. So one is making a very nice kheer, And when this kheer has been prepared, if somebody drops few drops, adds few drops of lemon in that, what will it do to the kheer? Will it enhance the flavor of the kheer? It will spoil the whole kheer. Just few drops of lemon added into this nice kheer spoils all the kheer. One is not able to relish anything. So same way, we are utilizing this human form of life, ये जो हमारा जीवन है, मनुष्य जीवन, उसको पात्र बनाकर उसके अंदर हमने भक्तों के संग रूपी दूध को डाला, भजन क्रिया रूपी चावल को उसके अंदर डाला, तपस्या की मिठास उसके अंदर डाली, दान रूपी मेवा उसके अंदर डाला, एंड आफ्टर वी हैव कुक्ड दिस नाइस खीर ऑफ गेटिंग क्लोजर टू कृष्णा, मेकिंग एडवांसमेंट इन स्पिरिचुअल लाइफ. बट इफ यू एड द फ्यू ड्रॉप्स ऑफ अभिमान, अभिमान रूपी नींबू की कुछ बूंदें आपने उसके अंदर निचोड़ दी, देन दिस होल स्पिरिचुअल जर्नी बिकम्स स्पॉइल्ड. दैट टिंज ऑफ प्राइड, जो थोड़ा सा अभिमान हृदय के अंदर आ जाए, तो उससे हमारा जो भक्ति के मार्ग में हमारा जो प्रोग्रेस है, वो पूरा का पूरा वहीं पर रुक जाता है. कृष्णा डज नॉट लाइक दिस टिंज ऑफ प्राइड इन द हार्ट. सो वी हैव टू बी वेरी केयरफुल हाउ इज अवर डीलिंग विद अदर डिवोटीज. इज अवर डीलिंग गाइडेड बाय द मोड ऑफ पैशन, मोड ऑफ इग्नोरेंस अंडर द इन्फ्लुएंस ऑफ इल्यूजरी एनर्जी विच लीड्स टू फ्रिक्शन बिटवीन द डिवोटीज, और वी आर एबल टू गिव अप अवर लोअर नेचर, डिवेल्प द जेन्युइन ह्यूमिलिटी इन द हार्ट एंड बी एबल टू सी गुड इन एवरीबडी. So we should develop that sort of relationship with all the devotees, keeping everybody in front of us. Not that, oh, I want to be in front of everybody. Our goal should be how I can connect the devotees, how I can bring the other soul at the feet of Krishna, how I can bring the other devotee in the shelter of Guru, but not taking the role of a controller. That through me, because of me, he came in touch with Guru. He should always communicate with Guru through me only. We want to keep ourselves in the background. Let them develop relationship with Guru and Krishna. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when the devotees come to Jagannath Puri to celebrate this Rath Yatra festival, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will meet all the devotees. And the devotees will have nice exchanges with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu is talking about all other devotees who were not able to come to Puri. He will inquire about, oh, who is that devotee? Who is that another devotee? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is inquiring about everybody. And once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going on to the tour of South India, and that time Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he told Mahaprabhu, When you go to that place, when you go to the banks of Godavari, you please meet Ramanand Rai and give your mercy to Ramanand Rai. See, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he is thinking of another devotee, that maybe this devotee should get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is what our reciprocation with the devotee should be. Not thinking about ourselves, oh, did Krishna remember me? Or did Guru remember me? We should do our duties in bhakti, our duties in the movement. Then if our activities are pleasing to Krishna, Krishna will automatically remember us. So Vidura is inquiring from Uddhava about all the different devotees who are directly associated with Krishna. He is inquiring, first of all, he is inquiring about Lord Krishna himself. How is Lord Krishna? How is he living peacefully, happily in the house of Maharaj Ugrasena, in the palace of, in his palace with all his queens. He is inquiring about Vasudev. Is Vasudev living happily? He is like a father to his sisters. How is Pradyumna? How is Aniruddha? How is Ugrasena? Maharaj Ugrasena was driven out of his own palace by Kamsa. But because of the grace of Lord Krishna, Maharaj Ugrasena was able to get his kingdom back. So how is Maharaj Ugrasena doing? How is another son of Krishna, Sambha? How is Akrura, the great devotee of Lord Krishna, who visited Vrindavan to bring Krishna and Balram to Mathura? And at that time he was so much absorbed in the ecstasy in remembrance of Krishna that he forgot the way to Krishna. He was rolling in the dust of Vrindavan. How is Devaki, the mother of Krishna? All her children were killed as soon as they were born. So Vidura is remembering all these various people, various devotees, and inquiring about them. He is remembering the great qualities of all these devotees. Now, even though Vidura had heard the news, when he went to Prabhas Kshetra, he came to know that the whole Yadus have been annihilated. They have fought with each other and they killed each other. All the Yadavas, all the associates of Krishna, they have gone back to their abodes after fulfilling their pastime, their leela. All the Kauravas have been killed. So all the news, he already had received all that news while visiting through various places of pilgrimage. But he is still inquiring about all these people. Why is that? What is the psychology behind that? Because sometimes, even though our near and dear one, they have gone, they have disappeared, they have left their bodies, but after their disappearance also we remember them. We don't want to accept this fact that that person has left us now. So people still talk about them, they talk about, they remember their some of the good pastimes or good qualities. So same way Vidura is remembering all of them and inquiring about all of them. So he is inquiring about Yudhishthir Maharaj. How is Yudhishthir Maharaj? Is Yudhishthir Maharaj now maintaining the kingdom according to the religious principle and with respect for the path of religion? Formerly Duryodhana was burning with envy because Yudhishthira was being protected by the arms of Lord Krishna and Arjuna as if they were his own arms. So now Yudhishthira Maharaj has got his kingdom back. He has defeated the Kauravas. All the Kauravas have been destroyed. He is ruling over the kingdom. But is he maintaining the kingdom according to the religious principle? So this is a very significant point. Because when somebody is seeking for something, right, when we are seeking for something to achieve in this world, one may take to some religious principle. As we say, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So somebody becomes religious, performs some religious activity, religious rituals, for the purpose of attaining some worldly pleasures, kama. Dharma is done to get some kama. Dharma is performed to get some artha. And purpose of artha is to do kama, enjoyment. So after getting the kingdom back, originally Yudhishthira Maharaj, he was a very religious person. He performed many religious activity. He was always protected by Krishna. But after getting his kingdom back, is he still maintaining all his religious activities? Is he maintaining the kingdom by following the principles of dharma? Or he is too much diverted to worldly pleasures? He is distracted by these worldly pleasures and he has given up all those religious principles. So that is very important. Because when somebody gets the worldly pleasures, it's very easy to get distracted by that. Having a very superior position in this world is also a big distraction. Like we quoted the example of Daksha Prajapati. As soon as he was given the post of this Prajapati, his proud, he shooted up, right? He was so much filled with proud that, oh, I'm a very special person. And then he was performing these rituals just for gaining popularity, gaining followers. So when we are moving forward into the spiritual life, performing devotional activity, along the way, if somebody gets little fame, little position, if somebody becomes a president of the temple or the member of the temple board, all these positions, they are very risky. One may fall down from one's practice sadhana bhakti and completely get distracted by these managerial activities. So one has to be very careful. So after getting opulence, this big position, they distract the person, and sometimes the big position become hindrance on the path of spiritual advancement. So is Yudhishthira Maharaj still maintaining his kingdom as per the religious principle? And then he is inquiring about Bhima. How is Bhima doing? Whether the unconquerable Bhima, who is like the cobra, has he released his long cherished anger upon the sinners? He is comparing Bhima with the cobra. Why is that? Because Bhima, he was filled with anger, rage, the mood of revenge from the Kauravas, from Duryodhana and Dushasana. So Vidura is specifically asking, is he relieved from his revengeful mood? Has he released his long cherished anger on the sinners? Comparing with cobra is because cobra, he remembers and he attacks back. And that was the mood of Bhima. He was remembering the insults done by the Kauravas and ready to attack back. But he was guided by Yudhishthira Maharaj. And because of the guidance given by Yudhishthira Maharaj, he was able to control his angers till the right moment. So same way for us, when we are guided by the devotees, when we are guided by the Guru Sadhu Shastra, we should be able to give up our lower nature, not utilize this mood of tit for tat. कि उसने मेरे साथ ऐसा किया, अभी मुझे उसके साथ बदला लेना है. Because this mood of revenge, it burns us also and it burns the other person also. The mood of revenge is like keeping the coal, the burning coal on your hand. That we want to throw this burning coal onto the other person when we get the right opportunity. But keeping that burning coal on your hand, we are burning ourselves also. So that revengeful mood is like that. And then he is inquiring about Arjuna. How is Arjuna, whose bow bear the name Gandiva, who is always famous among the chariot warriors for vanquishing his enemies, Parantapa. One of the name of Arjuna is Parantapa, who is conqueror of his enemies. How is he doing? Arjuna was so powerful that he satisfied Lord Shiva also in the battle. When Arjuna was performing the austerities, tapasya, to please Lord Shiva, to gain his mercy, his Pashupat Astra, at that time, Lord Shiva appeared there disguised as a hunter. So there was a argument between Arjuna and Lord Shiva in the form of hunter, and they have a kind of a competition, shooting the arrows. And Arjuna satisfied Lord Krishna, Lord Shiva in that. So Arjuna is very famous archer. He's the greatest chariot warrior, famous for his Gandiva bow. And how is Arjuna doing? And how are the twin brothers, Nakul and Sahadev? Are they protected by their brothers? Are they doing well? Just as the eye is always protected by the eyelid, they were always protected by the sons of Pratha. And all the Pandavas, because of their unity, because of maintaining their harmonious relationship, they finally snatched back the rightful kingdom from the hands of their enemy Duryodhana. So this Nakula and Sahadev, even though they were not the real brothers of Yudhishthir, Arjuna and Bhima, but they were very dear to Yudhishthira, Arjuna and Bhima as their own real brothers, the blood relation. They never treated them as the step brothers. कभी उन्होंने उनको सौतेले भाई की तरह व्यवहार नहीं किया. So the example given is, as the eye is always protected by the eyelid, these two brothers, Nakula and Sahadev, they were always protected by the Pandavas. Are they still living peacefully in the palace along with their other brothers? Or is Yudhishthira Maharaj still maintaining Nakula and Sahadev nicely? So this is a very significant question. What is the significance in that? Because the unity among people within one family is very natural when there is some calamity, when there is some distress in the family. Right? So at the time of distress, it's natural for people to come together. But when they achieve some opulence, at that time, it is very difficult to maintain that harmony in the relationship, maintain that unity and continue to live peacefully together. That's what we see in the society these days, in the families. The people, they are getting separated into nuclear families because of some disagreements, some sort of confusion, ego clashes. So he is asking, are Nakul Sahadev still maintained by their other brothers after they got back their kingdom, after they gained back their kingdom? So these five brothers, they are known in the world as the regular brothers. So Prabhupada is writing it as they are known as the regular brothers. Regular brother means as not as step brothers, just as they are real brothers with blood relation. So the three elder Pandavas, they took care of their younger brothers. And after winning back their kingdom from the hand of Duryodhana, are they still living happily? So what lesson we can learn from here when Vidura is asking this question? So we should see what is our relationship with other devotees around us. So whom do we consider our stepbrothers? Within this spiritual organization, we may consider the disciples of other gurus as our stepbrothers. Right? Sometimes we have a better relationship only with our own godbrother sisters. The disciples of our own Guru Maharaj, we think, oh, I want to have a very close relationship with them. And we may not develop relationship with other disciples of other gurus. That's like treating them as stepbrother sisters. And so there is no harmony. There is always argument. Oh, what I am doing to please my guru, that is best. My guru is best. So all that selfish agendas come up, which lead to separations within this movement, within the society. So we should maintain this harmonious relationship among all the devotees, considering them as the disciple of one guru, under the umbrella of one guru, who is Srila Prabhupada for this organization. And all the other gurus, they are acting on behalf of Prabhupada. They are giving diksha on behalf of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada is the founder acharya of the movement. So ultimately, Prabhupada is the siksha guru for everybody. So we should all have a nice relationship with everybody to make this organization grow more and more. Otherwise, there are so many reasons for fighting among each other and leading to small groups and separations within the organization. So, inquiry of Vidura, we can reflect back what we can learn from all these inquiries, from all these people what Vidura is inquiring about. And then Vidura is asking about Kunti Devi. Oh my lord, is Pritha still living? She lived only for the sake of her fatherless children. Otherwise, it was impossible for her to live without King Pandu, who was the greatest commander and who alone conquered the four directions. So when Pandu died, at that time, Madhuri and Kunti, they also wanted to give up their lives. And Madhuri, she requested Kunti that you please continue to live to raise these children. But I cannot live without Pandu, so I will enter into the fire, into this cremation fire. Like what we know as Sati Pratha, right? When the husband dies, sometime the wife, she enters into the fire. She sits into that pile, the burning pile. But Pritha, Kunti Devi, she continued to live just to maintain, just to raise these fatherless children, the Pandavas, the five brothers. So this Sati Pratha, this was a genuine system followed by women when they become widow. Rather than staying in separation of their husband, they voluntarily chose to give up their life, enter into the fire along with the husband, the dead body of the husband. Because the burning sensation of the fire was less painful compared to the burning sensation of separation from the husband. So for the woman who is very chaste wife, for her to live in separation of the husband was very painful, unbearable. So they voluntarily choose to give up their life. And the another principle also, the reason behind that is because when a widow woman is there, sometimes the uncirclopous people, they want to misuse or exploit the woman. And rather than to be exploited by other people, it's better they chose voluntarily to give up their life. And so that another principle also is so that the widow woman, she is also not trying to corrupt other good people. That she continue to live nicely, dressing up and trying to spoil other good people by distracting them, by spoiling their relationship in their family life. So for many reasons, this concept of Sati Pratha, it was a genuine concept, but it was never by force. It was a voluntarily accepting that. But in the modern times, in the current times, this whole ritual became concocted where people was forcibly tying the woman and forcing her to sit into the burning pyre of her husband. In Rajasthan, in many other places, this thing was happening where the woman is forced to become Sati, enter into the pyre. And because of that, this concept of this ritual, Sati Pratha, is now stopped. But this was very common even till 500 years ago also. So many Rajput kings, right, when they have attacks by the external forces, the outside forces, the Mughals and other Turkish and others, and if the Rajput king, he loses the battle, he loses his life, the wives of the king and the other women, they enter into the fire. So so that they are not touched by the other men to trying to forcibly take them away and spoil their chastity. So they will perform johar. So that performing johar is very common in Rajasthan among the Rajput Kshatriya women. So this Sati Pratha was continuing till 500 years ago also, but now because of the concoction, rather than voluntarily taking, women were forced. So this whole system is now stopped because of the uproar in the society. And sometimes the widow, she continued to live, but she take to asceticism completely by putting on white clothes, staying away from the society, not participating in the festivals, or shaving off the head also. So the purpose is not to corrupt other good people or not to be corrupted by others, because that will lead to Varna Sankara. So there are so many examples. In the olden time also, the woman, it's not necessary that always she will accept this to become Sati. So the example here is Pratha, right? She did not become Sati for the sake of raising the fatherless children. And then we hear about some other ladies also like that. Satyavati, she also did not become Sati. And we hear about Prahlad Maharaj's mother, Kayadu. She also did not become Sati. She also wanted to become Sati, but she was stopped by Prahlad Maharaj that you please continue to live for my sake. So the examples are there in the earlier time also, that women not always they become Sati. They continue to live for maintaining the children until they become independent. They are old enough to take care of themselves. So Pratha was living only just to take care of her fatherless children. So Vidura is remembering everybody, and now his needle turns toward Dhritarashtra after remembering all these people. So if he is asking about Dhritarashtra, he is saying, I simply lament for him who rebelled against his brother after death. By him, I was driven out of my house, although I was a sincere well-wisher. Because he was always favorable towards Duryodhana. He always accepted the line of action adopted by his own sons. So Vidura is remembering some of the actions of Dhritarashtra. But is Vidura remembering that out of revengeful mood? Is he saying that, oh, Dhritarashtra was such a bad guy, he threw me out of the house, he did so nasty things to the Pandavas, trying to burn them alive, trying to kill them in so many ways? No, Vidura is not having a revengeful mood. He is saying, I'm lamenting for that he adopted to the path of adharma, which led to his downfall. Because Dhritarashtra was always promoting his own children as the next ruler. Dhritarashtra was a classical example of promoting nepotism. See, this word nepotism is very famous these days in the social media, in the news. Right? Nepotism in Bollywood. So nepotism, Dhritarashtra was also adopting to nepotism. He was promoting his own children over the children, the sons of Pandu, to become the king. And this nepotism happened at many levels, at the level of business. Somebody want to promote their children even though they may not have any qualities how to run over this big business, but they make them as the CEO of the company or the managing director of the company. And so many other qualified people are working under them, have to follow their wrong directions also. And this nepotism happened at the level of kings who wanted to make their sons, even though they are not worthy, without having any qualities, they wanted to make them as the next king. And this sense of nepotism come in spiritual organizations also. Somebody, he want to promote his son as the next acharya, next guru, without having the qualities. As we say, one cannot become brahmana just as birth. One has to be qualified to be a brahmana based on the activities and the qualities. Janama karma, right? Birth and activities, the qualities what they acquire and the activities they perform. Based on that, they have to become qualified. So at the level of temple organization also, temple management also, somebody may promote nepotism. Oh, this family, they did so nice for the temple. Now their children, we have to promote them. We have to keep them in the limelight. And then their children. So this nepotism happens at various levels, which Dhritarashtra was also promoting. So he did so many bad things to the Pandavas out of envy. But Vidura is not complaining about that. He is not saying this out of envy or out of revengeful mood. What is the mood of Vidura? Vidura's mood is shown later on in the later passage also, right? Vidura went back. After all this pilgrimage, he went back to the palace and he gave guidance to Dhritarashtra that now you should give up the opulence of the palace. You should give up, take to asceticism. You should go to forest, renounce everything. So he was always the well-wisher. He always tried to give good counsel to Dhritarashtra before the war also and after the war also. So he was not saying anything out of envy or revengeful mood. He's saying, I am just lamenting. I wish he could have heard my advice earlier on and all that war could have been avoided. Everybody could have lived peacefully. So after remembering all these people, after inquiring about all these people, Vidura come back to Lord Krishna, remembering Krishna and his Bhakta Vatsala mood. He is saying, even though Krishna, he is the Lord, he is always present with the Pandavas in their situation of distress. He is always willing to relieve the distress of the sufferers. But he still refrained from killing the Kauravas. Although the Kauravas, they committed so many sort of sins. And although Krishna saw all their sinful activities, he still not killed them right away. He saw all these kings constantly agitating the earth by their strong military movements, which is carried out by the three kinds of false pride. But Krishna, he kept waiting. He did not kill. Krishna supplied unlimited sari to Draupadi in the assembly. But he, at that time, he did not kill Dhritarashtra. He could not kill Dushasana or Duryodhana. But does it mean that Krishna forgave them? Krishna forgave all their offenses, all their sins? No. Krishna waited for the right time. So why Krishna was not punishing all these adharmis right then and there? Why he just supplied the sari to Draupadi? Because Krishna is waiting for the right time. He is thinking, let them collect all other adharmic people also on their side. Let them make allies with all other adharmic kings also. And I will going to destroy all of them in one shot in the war of Kurukshetra. So Krishna is waiting. Let's see who all join the sides of Duryodhana. Because the birds of same feather, they flock together. Right? So for all the sinful people, all the adharmic people, they will come on the side of Duryodhana and they all will be destroyed at one time. For example, the example of Jarasandha. Jarasandha attacked on Krishna so many times, 17 times. Every time Krishna will destroy the whole army which is collected by Jarasandha, but leave Jarasandha alive. Why he was not killing Jarasandha? Because he was thinking, I have come here for the purpose of destroying all the miscreants, all the dharmic people, and I don't have to go searching for all these people. Let me sit here, let Jarasandha bring, collect all these dharmic people, bring here, and I'm going to destroy them. So Krishna could do that. But sometimes people think, how long should we keep doing that? How many times can we forgive our aggressors? Right? If somebody is an aggressor attacking on you, how many times one can forgive them? And this is what happened in the whole history of Bharatvarsh, the invaders. The Mughals attacked on India so many times. There were so many wars between the Mughal rulers and the Rajput kings. And the Rajput kings, they will say, oh, we are Rajputs. We don't attack on somebody if somebody take our shelter, falls at our feet, or somebody is without weapon. We don't attack on them. We don't kill them. We just forgive them. So they will let go of these aggressors. They will come again. And that led to the destruction of the Rajputs. Maharaj Prithviraj Chauhan. Right? Muhammad Ghori attacked on him so many times, and why he ultimately got killed by the same Ghori? Because he let go of him so many times, and that led to his own destruction later on. Because people think, oh, we want to follow in the footstep of Krishna. Somebody is attacking on us as an aggressor, but we will let him go, as Krishna let go of Jarasandha. Krishna can do that because Krishna has a different purpose. We are not on the side of or on the level of Krishna. We have to see what Krishna is teaching. We don't have to look at the actions of Krishna. We have to look at the teachings of Krishna. Krishna is teaching the principle of Shatoshathyam. That with the cheater, one has to act in the cheating way. Whatever way of fighting war skills one is adopting to, one has to fight with them with the same principles. If somebody is hiding back and shooting on you, you cannot say, oh, I will come in the front and I will attack on you with the sword. Or if somebody is ready to attack on you when you are without weapon, but you keep sticking to the principle, oh, I will not attack when somebody is without weapon. Krishna taught the principle of Shatoshathyam. But yes, Krishna waited to give them the punishment. And what is the reason? Because Krishna want to destroy all of them at the right time. All of them together will be killed in this war of Kurukshetra. Nobody can escape this law of karma. Sometimes we may think, so many sinful people in the society, they are flourishing. Some politician, he may be so corrupt, but he is flourishing. But right now he is flourishing because maybe some of the pious deeds he may have done in the past life. So he is reaping the result of that. But the result of all the sinful activity he is doing, all the corruption he is doing right now, he has to suffer the reaction, the consequences of that. Nobody can escape the law of karma. As you said, the mills of God grind slowly but exceedingly fine. Sometimes there is a big tsunami comes and thousands, sometimes lakhs of people are killed. A few years back there was a tsunami in Sri Lanka. Lakhs of people were buried under the ground, under the sand. And somebody was correlating with that. What is the reason that nature retaliate? That people perform so many sinful activities. People go on committing this animal slaughter. And Krishna is waiting. And at one time he just does some natural disaster, bring all these people together and award their reaction for all their sinful activities. This animal slaughter, abortion, where the child is not able to see the light of the day. So they have to face the consequences. They will be annihilated like that. They have to keep going in this cycle of annihilation, that they will not be able to see the light. So Krishna does not forgive anybody. Krishna awards their punishment in due course of time. And here it says people out of three type of pride, they commit so many sinful activities under the influence of this violent passion because of the friction they are causing in the society. What is this three type of pride? So three mada utan utpathanam. Three mada, three type of pride. Because of one's wealth, because of high education, and because of many followers. Because of these three things, when somebody has a lot of wealth, somebody has some better education, higher education, or somebody gets a lot of followers, fame, this all can lead to pride in the heart. And under the influence of pride, one end up committing so many of adharmic activities, the wrong activities. So like all these kings, because they were blinded by their opulences, they were blinded by their reign over their citizen, that we have so many people to rule over. And because of all that, they were so much filled with pride and taking to the side of adharma. And Krishna, in one shot, finally he destroyed everybody. So we have to be very careful that we don't develop this sense of pride, either because of any opulences which are given by Krishna to us, or because of any name and fame we get in this world. We should try to stay calm, not being influenced by all this mana apamana, fame infamy, happiness distress in this world. See, a dead body is not influenced by this fame infamy or happiness distress. For a dead body, all this does not matter. So same way, even though living in this world, one should act like that one is not influenced by this mana apamana, sukh dukkha. So rather than getting pride because of all that, one should stay grounded, stay humble. And then Vidura is remembering, if the Lord's appearance is to annihilate the upstarts, his activities are all transcendental, and they are enacted for the understanding of all persons. And the Lord is transcendental to all the material modes. What could be the other purpose of his coming to this earth rather than giving pleasure to all his devotees? So Krishna, even though he performs all sort of activity, his ultimate purpose is to please his devotees, to protect his devotees, to destroy the upstarts and annihilate the miscreants in this world. But while doing so, Krishna is not binded by any karmic reaction. He is transcendental to these modes of material nature, and he is beyond this law of karma. As Krishna himself tells in Bhagavad Gita, namam karmani bandanti name karma phalespraha iti mam jo abhijanati karam bhirna sabandhyate. I am not bound by any action or their reaction, and I don't have any need to achieve anything in this world. If somebody knows about me, about my activities, he also is not bound in this material world. So we should understand what is the real nature of Krishna. All his activities are transcendental. He may be stealing the butter, stealing the clothes of the gopis. He is getting all these miscreants killed in the war of Kurukshetra by some seemingly dharmic ways also, cheating ways also. But all his activities are transcendental. He does not reap any reaction for any of his activities. If somebody think Krishna performed all these activities, so he also has to suffer the consequences, then that person is grossly misunderstood, having a grossly misunderstanding of the principle of Shastras. So Krishna appears in this world for the benefit of all the devotees. There is no other purpose for him to appear in this world. Tasya prapannakhilam lokapanam avasthitanam anushasane sway arthaya jatasya yadushvajasya vartam sakhe kirtaya tirtha kirtahe. He is unborn, yet he appears by his causeless mercy upon the surrendered devotees in all parts of the universe. Only for their interest he appears in this family of Yadus, who are his unalloyed devotees. O my friend, please therefore chant the glories of the Lord, who is meant to be glorified in the place of pilgrimage. Arthaya jatasya yadushvajasya. So for the benefit of the Yadus, Lord appeared in their family. Tasya prapannakhilam lokapanam vartam sakhe kirte atirtha kirte. Oh my friend, sakhe. So Vidura is telling Uddhava, oh my friend, therefore let's chant the glories of the Lord. Kirte atirtha kirte. He is to be glorified in all the places of pilgrimage. So Prabhupada right here, the purpose of pilgrimage is to remember the Lord constantly. And therefore the Lord is known as Tirtha Kirti. The purpose of going to the place of pilgrimage is to get the chance to glorify the Lord. So even today, all the times have changed, there are still pilgrimage sites in India. For example, Mathura, Vrindavan, Jagannath Puri, Mayapur, where we have a chance to stay, and people are awake from early in the morning, 4 a.m. till midnight, and they are constantly engaged some way or other in chanting the holy names of the Lord, the glories of the Lord. The beauty of such a pilgrimage site is that automatically one remembers the Lord's glories, his name, fame, qualities, pastimes, and all the entourage are all identical to the Lord. And therefore chanting the glories of the Lord invokes the personal presence of the Lord. So anytime or anywhere pure devotees meet and chant the glories of the Lord is present there without any doubt. So it is said by Lord himself, he always stays where his pure devotees chant his glories. See, the Lord himself declares in the Shastras that I reside where my devotees are chanting my glories. So the places of pilgrimage, these are filled with the devotees who are always chanting the glories of the Lord, chanting the holy name of the Lord. And the purpose of pilgrimage is to sanctify ourselves, purify ourselves, perform austerity, not for some worldly pleasure. Holy dham mein jab jate hain to apne sukh prapti ke liye nahi jate, bhagwan ko sukh dene ke liye, bhagwan ko prasann karne ke liye jate hain. The pilgrimage is not for as a fun. जैसे बोलते हैं यात्रा का मतलब नहीं खमन पात्र पूरी पात्र, कि यात्रा में जाते हैं तो भी अपना सुख सुविधा का पूरा ध्यान रखते हैं कि अरे कहां पर ठहरूंगा, वेयर विल आई स्टे, वेयर विल आई ईट, एंड ऑन द वे मेकिंग अरेंजमेंट फॉर सो मेनी फूड स्टफ टू कैरी विद अस, आई हैव एनफ थिंग्स टू मेंटेन माई सेल्फ, फुलफिल ऑल माई डिजायर्स, सेटिस्फाई माई सेंसेस. Yatra is not khaman puri patra, यात्रा का मतलब है तपस्या की मात्रा, हाउ मच ऑस्टेरिटी वी आर परफॉर्मिंग. सो द प्लेस ऑफ पिलग्रिमेज, द पर्पज ऑफ पिलग्रिमेज इज टू प्यूरिफाई अवर सेल्फ, टू रिमेंबर द लॉर्ड कॉन्स्टेंटली. And wherever the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is going on, wherever the glories of the Lord are sung, that place become like the place of pilgrimage. When we recite Bhagavad Gita, when we recite Bhagavatam, that place itself becomes pilgrimage. So that's why we stress so much on the chanting of holy name, that we should chant the holy name of the Lord in all places, in all circumstances. Sarvatra Sarvada. The chanting of the holy name, this is a system given to us by the great devotees of the Lord, by the Acharyas, as the only method in Kali Yuga. By chanting of the holy name, we can purify ourselves and we can get connected with Krishna. So chanting of the holy name is like we are ringing the doorbell of Krishna's palace. We are knocking on to the door of Krishna's palace. And sometimes we may think, I am chanting the name of Krishna for so many hours, so many days, so many months. But is Krishna really listening to me? Is Krishna really reciprocating with me? Yes, Krishna is listening. Krishna is reciprocating. Krishna is very attentive to his name. See, as we are attentive to our name, somebody calls our name, even though somebody may not have called our name, somebody else's name who is similar to our name, we look towards that, thinking, oh, maybe somebody called me. Somebody may have said Vrindapati, and I may look towards, maybe thinking, oh, somebody called Vrindanath. So we are very attentive to our name. Same way Krishna is also very attentive to his name. As soon as we call out to the name of Krishna, Krishna becomes very attentive. He is hearing. But sometimes we became so impatient, we think, is Krishna really listening? Is this method really working? Is this chanting of the holy name really powerful? We became impatient. We lose faith in the process and we give up this process of chanting. It's like we have been knocking on to the door of Krishna. We are ringing the doorbell of Krishna. Krishna is moving towards us to open the door. But before Krishna arrives there, we just become impatient when we move away. That is our situation sometimes. Or even if Krishna does not reciprocate immediately, we have to continue calling out to Krishna. It's like you go out the house of your friend and you are calling out to your friend, Ravi, Ravi, Ravi. So you called your friend one time, two time, three time. He has not come to the door. But you keep calling out six, seven, eight times. Then maybe the wife of Ravi will tell, see, your friend at the doorstep is calling out to you. Why are you not going? The same way the internal energy of Krishna, Srimati Radharani, she is telling Krishna, see, this devotee, he is so nicely chanting the holy name. You should reciprocate to him. So Radharani gives our application to Krishna. Radharani hamari sifarish lagati hai Krishna ke samne. See, this is such a nice devotee. He is engaging in chanting of your holy name so nicely. He is doing bhakti so nicely, doing some service so nicely. So we should take to this process of chanting very seriously. Wherever the chanting is going on, that place itself becomes a place of pilgrimage. And chanting is so powerful, it can remove all the influences of Kali, all the bad influences from our life. Just like poison, in no matter what form and quantity poison is given, it destroys the life. To contrary to that, the holy name is so powerful, in whatever form and shape the holy name is chanted, it brings a purifying effect. If the holy name can make the stones float in the water, will the holy name not able to deliver us from this ocean of material existence? Agar भगवान के नाम के सहारे पत्थर तैर सकता है, तो भगवान के नाम के सहारे क्या जीव इस भौतिक सागर से तैर कर पार नहीं जा सकता? सो विद फुल फेथ एंड कन्विक्शन वी शुड चैंट द होली नेम विद अटमोस्ट ह्यूमिलिटी एंड पेशेंस. एंड व्हाट इज द बेस्ट टाइम टू चैंट द होली नेम? द बेस्ट टाइम टू चैंट द होली नेम इज इन द अर्ली मॉर्निंग, ब्रह्म मुहूर्त. सो मेनी टाइम वी हैव डिस्क्राइब्ड द सिग्निफिकेंस ऑफ ब्रह्म मुहूर्त, चैंटिंग द होली नेम इन द अर्ली मॉर्निंग आवर्स, बिकॉज द होल एटमोस्फियर इज सो पीसफुल. इट्स कंप्लीटली इन द मोड ऑफ गुडनेस. इन द अर्ली मॉर्निंग आवर्स देयर इज नो इन्फ्लुएंस ऑफ पैशन एंड इग्नोरेंस, एंड इट इज वेरी इजी टू कनेक्ट विद द लॉर्ड. So one should try to wake up early in the morning and chant the holy name. The holy name can be chanted at any time, no doubt. But the morning hours are specifically beneficial. We keep telling devotees, get up early in the morning, chant the holy name in the morning. But still, people have so much of conditioning that they keep sleeping till late morning hours, till 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Especially the weekends are considered. Aaj to chutti hai. Chutti ka matlab 9 baje tak sona, 10 baje tak sona. That is not the purpose of holiday. On the regular days, we are saying, I don't have time to take to the devotional service, to chant the holy name, to engage in some service. And on the weekends, then we waste all the time in other things. So get up early in the morning. It is good for your health also. Sleeping early at night, going to bed early and waking up early in the morning, it's beneficial in all ways. As there is a saying, early to bed, early to rise makes you healthy, wealthy and wise. Right? So we used to hear this statement from our childhood in schools. But how many people really follow that? Early to bed and early to rise. But it is true. It is helpful in maintaining your good health, to bring prosperity in life, to make progress in spiritual life. From health point of view, the late evening hours, 9 p.m. till 12 p.m., what is happening is the toxins in the body, when we take rest, those toxins are getting released into our intestines, which can be flushed out. But if we don't take rest those hours, if one is still active in some activities, engaging in some activities, then those toxins keep floating in the blood itself and they are not released into the waste. So that is deteriorating the health. It is spoiling one's health. But if one sleeps early, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, those toxins are released in the intestines to be released with the waste. So that's why it says early to bed, early to rise makes you healthy. It makes you intelligent also. It brings proper intelligence, sharp memory if somebody wakes up early in the morning. So not just for spiritual life, for any aspect of life, if somebody really want to prosper in life, be successful in life, one should get up early in the morning. All this big businessman, right? If a very nice businessman, a politician or a sports person to be able to practice their sport, they get up early in the morning. Our Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi ji, he wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning. He sleeps only 3 to 4 hours. He wakes up at 3 o'clock. Then he chants the holy name of the Lord. Bhagwan ke naam jap karte hain. Bhagwan se sadbuddhi lene ke liye. And then he does his exercise for 2 hours to maintain his good health, to be able to serve the country, to serve the citizens, serve the people. And many sports people, many Hollywood stars, actually, they wake up early in the morning to perform some exercise, some yoga, to be fit, physically fit. So for all aspects of life, getting up early in the morning is very important. But one has to have a very strong why. Why I want to get up early in the morning. Until our why is strong, the determination will not come. So my why has to be strong. I need to get up in the morning. I want to chant the holy name of the Lord, to please the Lord, to make progress in spiritual life. But still some devotees complain. I want to get up in the morning. I am not able to get up. बहुत सारे भक्तों के साथ होता है. We also have gone through those stages. That you put on an alarm clock, 4 o'clock. And in the morning alarm is ringing. You put it, hit it the snooze button and go to sleep again. Again 10 minutes later the alarm is ringing. Again hit the snooze button and again go to sleep. So 1 hour just keep this thing keep going on. So there are a few tips actually how we can wake up early in the morning. To wake up early in the morning, first of all, the previous evening meal should be very light. And you should eat the meal 2-3 hours before going to bed. Not that one eats a very heavy meal at 10 o'clock and goes to bed. And then there is no chance of getting up early in the morning. One should eat a very light meal in the previous night. And in the morning, if one is putting an alarm clock also, try to put the alarm clock not next to you so that you hit the snooze button and again go to sleep. Better put the alarm little away from you. So you have to get up from the bed and walk to that place and then turn off the alarm. By that time, one will become little awake. Another method which some devotees use of technology. Right, sometimes we tell our another devotee friend, oh, please call me at 4 o'clock to wake me up. So the another devotee, another friend may call you at 4 o'clock. And sometimes people use that also on the negative side. They'll say, oh yeah, I woke up, okay, thank you. And then again, after disconnecting the call, they go to bed. But one should tell. Another better tip is not just to receive a call from somebody, but tell them, ask me to read some portion of Bhagavad Gita. Ask me to read some verse of Bhagavad Gita. So that person may ask you, okay, please go read your, pick up your Bhagavad Gita and open chapter 9, text 27 and read that for me. Right? So by the time you will get up, go to pick up Bhagavad Gita, open the Bhagavad Gita, read that verse, definitely your sleep will go away. Your lethargy, laziness will drive away. So there are so many tips one can use to be able to get up in the morning. But we have to be really determined, desirous to get up in the morning and engage in the chanting of holy name. Another technological advancement actually that one can use. There are so many apps these days which one can use to put an alarm. There is an app called Alarmy. And actually that app is rated as the most annoying alarm app. Because one cannot simply turn off the alarm in that app. One has to solve some sort of puzzle, some mathematical puzzle or some other puzzle. And until that one does not solve that puzzle correctly, the alarm will not turn off. So one can use those kind of trick to give up that sleeping mode in the early morning. There is another app called Snap Me Up. Snap Me Up is to turn off the alarm, you have to take a selfie. And there is some feed is there that selfie will be sent to one particular person, whatever you use in that app. So one has to hit one's own selfie to turn off the alarm. And doing all this sort of thing, it will wake you up. So one can use this help of technology to wake up in the morning, eat light previous day, ask somebody to call you to help you get up in the morning. And then we should all engage in the chanting of holy name, which is the most purifying, most beneficial in this age of Kali. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So that is the purpose of visiting the holy places, to be able to remember Krishna all the time, to engage in the chanting of holy name. And by engaging in these activities, we can make our own home as a place of pilgrimage. So listening to all these descriptions of Bhagavatam and trying to connect with them, try to relate to them, it can bring us so much of uplifting to make progress in spiritual life. That's why hearing Bhagavatam, reading Bhagavatam and chanting of the holy name, these are the most important activities to progress in spiritual life. And we should wholeheartedly take to this process. Grantraj Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. So thank you very much. If anybody has any question, any comment, please feel free to ask.
All participants are unmuted.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. Hare Krishna,
Mataji. Hare Krishna, Swamiji. Dhanna Pranam. Very, very wonderful class, Swamiji. Very inspiring. The way you are encouraging all of us for early morning chanting. And also, I like the part that you mentioned about how we should get attracted to the holy name. Like the Krishna is ringing, like we are ringing the bell, knocking on the door of Krishna, and he's about to come, but we just are so impatient that we just walk away. And like we will, somebody, we are attracted to our name, but we are not getting that attraction to call his name with that same feeling. He is, whenever we call him, he is listening to us, but we are not able to understand and perceive that. So thank you, Prabhuji, with all the wonderful qualities of Vidurai which you mentioned. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Any other questions on Facebook page? Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yeah, no new question, Prabhu, but Suresh Vaidya Prabhu asked this question, like, when did Vidura left Hastinapur? Is it after the battlefield? Did he become continue as a minister with under the Yudhishthira's kingdom?
No, so Vidura left the Hastinapur, left the palace before the battlefield, before the battle started, right? After Krishna came as a peace messenger and his proposal was denied, at that time, Vidura was trying to give good counsel to Dhritarashtra and he was attacked by Duryodhana, word attacked as a, through words, harsh words of Duryodhana. And at that time, Vidura left Hastinapur. So he did not want to participate in this war also on any side. It's not that Vidura said, okay, I'm going to leave the side of Kauravas and I will join the side of Pandavas. So he just left and went on pilgrimage. And after this whole episode of war has happened, everything has, all the Kauravas have been destroyed. Yudhishthira Maharaj has become the king now. After getting the teachings from Maitreya, after meeting Uddhava, and then Uddhava guides Vidura to go to Maitreya, and then Vidura has a nice exchanges with Maitreya, so many discussions, which we'll read through third canto and fourth canto of Bhagavatam. And then Vidura comes back to Hastinapur, and he guides Dhritarashtra to give up his attachments now and renounce everything, become an ascetic. And at that time, it's not that Vidura become minister again under Yudhishthira Maharaj. That is not what Mahabharata and Bhagavatam is telling us. I know in the serial, which was shown on TV, Mahabharata serial, B.R. Chopra, in that serial, they showed like that. That after the war has happened, Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Dhritarashtra and Gandhari to continue to live in their palace. And Vidura also comes back and Yudhishthira requested him, oh, you become my minister now. And Vidura accepted that. That is not the reality. That is not shown right in that serial. And that's why we should not just accept these TV serials as our gurus. Whatever is shown in them, that as the reality. The scriptures are teaching us what is the real storyline. And we should follow the scriptural direction, scriptural injunction. So Vidura just came back. Yes, it is true. He came back to guide Dhritarashtra, to instruct Dhritarashtra. And then along with Dhritarashtra, he left again. So thank you for the question and giving me the opportunity to clarify that point, because many people have that sort of misunderstanding. Thank you. Any other question or comment? Okay, so thank you very much. Granthraj Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yes, Mataji?
Prabhuji, one question if you have time. I don't know.
Sure, Mataji, please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Prabhuji, I thought like, I'm just trying to understand the reference again in Canto 3, because in Canto 1, we talk about, we have the chapter of the Dhritarashtra leaves home, quits home.
Yes.
Before that, Vidura is coming back, right? He's coming back from his pilgrimage and all that stuff. And then he was going to tell Dhritarashtra that you need to renunciate and all that. So basically, now we are talking about Canto 3. So again, they give a background of it again in the initially. Is that no.
See, here it is not the storyline of Mahabharata described in Bhagavata. We heard about that Dhritarashtra leaves home and all that in Canto 1. But now what is that? We are going in more details what Vidura did when he went on pilgrimage. Right? So it's just describing the details of his pilgrimage. What did Vidura do? Whom all did he meet? He met with Uddhava, and what were the discussions between Vidura and Uddhava? And then he met Maitreya, and what kind of discussions happened between them. So we are just going in more details. Bhagavatam is going in detail of those. It's not in a sequence of storyline of Mahabharata.
Okay, Prabhuji, now I get it. Thank you. Because I missed the earlier part, now we must have discussed that. All right, Prabhuji, I'll go through. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai.